What is Christian fantasy? That is the question for the day. Welcome to the Grenhill Chronicles podcast. My name is Don Bishop, and I write as T.S. Pedramon. Pardon me as I look at the screen behind you to remind myself what my notes were. But Christian fantasy is going to be the topic of the interview today with author Herman P. Hunter. You may recall him from back in April. And, you know, we talked about what an author might bring to an event, a sales event or a signing event, whatever. He's back on today, and we're going to talk about what is Christian fantasy, because that's something that he writes. Also, by the way, I'm sorry I missed the last 3 weeks. Life has been huge. I'm kind of talking back and forth with myself, but so Herman P. Hunter, this interview was actually scheduled on April 24th. Today, as I record this intro, is May 22nd, so I am almost a month behind the interview as I prep this for publication, and that's because life has been very busy. I kind of fell behind. I had some car repairs that needed to be doing, and because we're trying to extend our runway, and that requires that we have money to live on, then I did these car repairs myself. We're not done, actually. I am looking forward to replacing the exhaust manifold gaskets on one of our cars. But car repairs, and then my computer has been on the fritz. And that's what really kind of did the podcast in, because my computer kept randomly dying. And I believe I have just now solved it. I actually installed a new component this afternoon, and then I ran a stress test. I was actually still able to crash the computer, but that was doing something very, very taxing and not typical. So I think I'm up and running again. And in fact, doing the video recording and editing to publish this podcast to you today as you're listening or watching tells you that I somehow made it through editing tonight. Computer repair. We have our old house. We're probably going to sell that this summer in the next couple of months. And we need to get it ready. And that's been something that, you know, it's taken some attention. And my health has suffered a bit. But on the topic of health, my knee, it has taken a turn for the better. And I'm so glad. Within the last few weeks, I was able to go on a 2.5 mile run. And then a week after that, I ran about 2 miles on the treadmill. And my knee did not do a constant aching the following day, or even the rest of the day, the same day. So I have hopes that I might be just looking at being fully recovered in a few months. And it's been about a year and a half since my knee troubles began. So I'm really glad. Although, you know, since I'm not used to running, I did that 2.5 mile run, and then my heels hurt the next day. Well, the end of the day and the next day. So that's whatever, you know, trade off until I get used to it again. And other things that I've been busy with. I did a few more library visits, and I actually ran 2 promotions in the month of May, and I didn't tell you because things have been crazy and busy, and still figuring out how I'm doing this. But I'll try to let you in on what's going on. I'll tell you more later, but there is a promo in June. We're just kind of catching up here. Library visits. I have one more library visit planned. It's already scheduled for, is that next week? I can't look at my planner right now, but one more library visit is scheduled, and I have I went to a CRRL con, which is a kind of a comic con thing at one of our local libraries in this area, and it was fun. You know, it was kind of a library signing event plus. You know, there were a few of us authors there, And actually, I talked to a couple of them and looking at having them come on the podcast in the future. And one of them writes fantasy, one of them writes science fiction. So I think, you know, they're great, very well within the realm of what I'm doing with this podcast. Yeah, so the CRRL Con was it was a fun event. I took my kids there. Well, I took two of my kids there, and my 12-year-old saw a little LARP demonstration, and now she wants to go and participate in a LARP, and so we'll look at trying to do that in June. Like, there's a specific date that we'll be looking at doing that. And I actually talked to the LARPers as well about coming on the podcast. So when I take my daughter to go participate that Saturday in June, I'll probably go there and record a conversation with them at the same time. That's not fully set in stone yet, but yeah, that'll be fun. What else? So next Saturday, I will be at the Rustic Charm Barn Spring Fair at the Rappahannock Campground from noon to 4 p.m. So you can find me there, and that's in Fredericksburg, Virginia. Now, as far as like what's been going on over the last month when I wasn't publishing podcasts, not only did I not publish, but I did record. So I actually have something of a backlog. It's a modest one, but it is a backlog, which is great because that means I'll be able to bring these episodes like I should have been able to the last month. But yeah, I really hit it hard with recording, not realizing how busy I was going to be. And so while I was busy recording and my computer dying, I actually had to reschedule a few of those interviews because my computer was crashing and I couldn't record, I couldn't do a video interview. In the meantime, I figured out how to kind of, I have an old video card, and when I use that old video card, it doesn't tax the other components in the computer and it doesn't crash. But I also have limited, decent usability, but limited for as far as what I'm doing with video editing and lots of other stuff. Anyway, so where was I? Right. So I was able to record some of those, but then in the middle of all this, yeah, I had to reschedule some interviews and until I could figure out how to get my computer to stop crashing, and then I couldn't really go through with editing until I could figure out how to make it stop crashing while using high performance components. So, yeah, a little bit of a backlog. And I have what? There's this right now, but after this, it's one, two, three, four episodes already recorded. And then I'm recording another one tomorrow. And wait, as I was. One, two, three, four, five. Five episodes already recorded. And I'm recording another one tomorrow. I have another one scheduled for May 31st to record. Yeah, so hopefully these last 4 weeks don't repeat because I'll be able to schedule ahead of time. And yeah. So I'll have, just to give you a sneak preview, next week I'll be sharing a conversation with Marla Himeta. Again, that was she wrote Master of Music, kind of musical historic fantasy, and so that's a conversation about how to write villains. And then the following week, unless I reorder some of these episodes, because I might do that, but I'm looking at two more conversations with Noah Healy, who was on, I believe the last episode I published 4 weeks ago. So, yeah, so Noah Healy is back for 2 consecutive weeks. And then after that, It'll be author Mike Buxbaum. And we talked about... I don't remember the topic right now. that's all right. It was a good conversation. And then after that, author Anthony Doyle, who is an Irishman living in Brazil. And so we kind of talk about how culture informs one's writing. And tomorrow I'm recording an episode with somebody who writes about pirates, who writes nonfiction about pirates. So that will be an intriguing conversation. I'll be really excited to bring that to you. I actually might, like I said, I might reorder some episodes. I anticipate this one being a really fun conversation. I might bump it forward depending on what would be appropriate for his timeline and you know, not really wanting to push other people back. But I also, in the last few weeks, I did some guest appearances on other podcasts. One of those is already out, I believe. Maybe it's two. But I recorded with the Happy Moment podcast, which is not out yet. I recorded with the Black Tower podcast. That one is out. And you know, I'll put the link in the show notes. I recorded with the Curious Expressions podcast, and that one is not out. And that one I had to reschedule because my computer was crashing. But you know, I was able to. The Curious Expression podcast. And excuse me. I will be recording with the Epic Sages podcast at the end of this month. I'm not sure when that will come out, but when it does, I'll share the link. But I've been busy podcasting, and then lately I've been, you know, because I couldn't keep up with the load that I had taken on. You know this because I didn't publish a podcast the last three Thursdays. I missed three consecutive Thursdays. And I've been kind of reassessing and below the camera, I'm not going to show you, but I have all these note cards that my wife helped me with. She wrote them out, and we've been kind of ordering them. Got to take care of this thing, got to take care of that thing first, etc. I put a new face on the, not literal face, but I installed a new theme on the website, grenhill.media, which, you know, isn't really a huge deal yet, but, it was hideous. And now it's still ugly, but it's not hideous, at least. And, you know, we'll fix that more later, but right now, at least it doesn't look so hideous as it did before. What was I going to say? Oh, right. So, and I've been very frustrated about not getting enough writing time. And so I'm making a point to write more because I need to publish more books. That's the whole point, right? I want to share these stories that I'm writing. And in order to do that, I have to actually write them. And I have been able to, proof of concept, not just proof of concept, but actually usable. I dictated with just my Zoom H1 microphone, which I don't have with me at the moment, so I can't show it to you. But it's a portable microphone, really nifty, and I'm able to dictate with it, and then it gets the words out on the page a lot faster than I ever could typing, let alone handwriting. I can do that on the go. I fixed it to the visor in my car while I drove to an appointment. And by the time I got back, I had 2,000 something words. So I'm excited to be able to speed up the writing. The clincher right now is having enough outline ahead of myself so that when I'm like, okay, I need to dictate the next scene, I have something to dictate, right? So I'm definitely going to be focusing on that. And also coming up, so I mentioned I have a promo in June. That'll be June 18th, and I'll tell you more when it gets closer to. So if you want to share the book and convince a friend, it'll be 99 cents that day. The ebook will be 99 cents. And I do have one bookstore signing already scheduled. I'm working on another one or two. But if you have a bookstore and you're somewhere within reasonable driving distance, like even up to 4 hours of Northern Virginia, then and you'd like to see me come and do a signing there, then let me know and I'll reach out to that bookstore and see if we can set something up. But yeah, the one I have planned is in Manassas at McKay's Used Books, and I'll be out front on September, way out in September. That's just because that was their availability. I don't remember the exact date. I'll tell you in September. But I have one bookstore scheduled. I don't have any cons conventions scheduled, unless you count the fair. I guess that's, yeah, a little different, but I'll be at that fair at the Rappahannock Campground next Saturday. Sorry, as this is coming out, this Saturday, which will be May 25th. Yeah, today's the 22nd as I record this, so that'll be May 25th. So come and see me and get your book signed and send me suggestions of cons that you'd like to see me at, and I am not above making a longer drive for those. Assuming I'll get like a couple days of sales, so it'll be worth it, financially at least. Not financially, like it wouldn't be enough to pay a living wage for paying our mortgage and all that, but getting face out there and getting finding people who can find other people, eventually that will build up to something that I'll be able to live off of and keep writing these stories full time. So yeah, if you have ideas for conventions you want to see me at, hit me up, send them at me at author@thorn.link, or you can email to podcast@thorn.link, either way. And yeah, because I need to go to conventions. That's where I'm going to find a lot of people who will be interested in my books. So that's kind of what's going on. That's what's coming up. I'm sure that I've forgotten big things. I don't remember them right now. Newsletter. I have a lot of new newsletter subscribers, and they haven't heard from me yet, so I need to send out a newsletter this Friday. Yeah, I think I'm gonna actually take out all of my filler words this time, because I know I say a lot, and I know I've said it a lot in this video. So anyway, without further ado, here's our conversation. Oh, wait, one more thing. This recording with author Herman P. Hunter got truncated at the end. So I will apologize right now. When it right at the point where it got truncated, I'll kind of fade it out and just go to the music. It's already almost 10:00 p.m. right now, so I'm not going to record an outro for this podcast episode. When that interview is done, you'll hear the music, and that'll be a wrap. And we'll see you next week on the Grand Hill Chronicles podcast. But for now, author Herman P. Hunter. All right, welcome back to the Grand Hill Chronicles podcast, author Herman Hunter. Glad to have you.
Hey.
So we were talking right before we hit the record button, and you have a book coming out very soon.
Yes, why don't you tell Revenant, us about that? The Revenant and the Cult. See if I can get it without the glare. Pull it back here. Of course, it's backwards. But yeah, it's The Revenant, the Cult. It's book one, The Trapper and the Missing Spy. Be coming out May 21st, 2024. It's a follow-up to The Revenant and the Tomb, which was my first book, which is a novella. So, and then I'm going to be releasing book two later on this year. So I split the book up because, you know, it's not exactly in best economic times. So,
yeah.
So a little bit less expensive for the end user. And I'm also thinking about doing a Kickstarter where I do a hardbound with both of them combined. So that's one of my latest developments.
And for anybody who might not have heard you tell us about it before, why don't you, what is this series about?
Well, it's considered Christian fiction, although I call it Christian-esque fiction. It's basically, it's about a holy warrior who, in this, a holy warrior goes out and battles evil. And it's not just like bad guys. It's, you know, fallen angels, terrible creations made by these things. And it all has a lot to do with a war between the fallen and basically it's God. I call him the All-Father, but it's God. And it takes place on an actual terrestrial scale. So, and that war was over. It was lost by the fallen angels. And now the world itself sort of has to deal with a lot of the fallout from that. And I don't want to get into too many spoilers, but you learn more about the things that are to come in the centuries that follow after this war ended. So, and that's going to be part of this book. And this deals with a cult. I introduced a religion known as the Four. Four. And I kind of go into more details about that in this book. So I kind of develop the books and the world such that I'm not like doing a big book and lore dumping all the lore in one book. I kind of space it out across different books and different stories in the world. So,
With my Nightshade Unicorn series, I don't really lore dump. I mean, there is a certain amount of information that the reader needs to know at the beginning. I don't think I lore dump. I think I show it, you know, in context as the reader views it. But but there is lore that hasn't come up in the first book. It wasn't part of this little corner of the larger world. So.
Exactly. And that's the thing. I don't like have a map of the world because the world itself is huge. So, so I kind of like give it in bite-sized chunks. And, so the second one's already done. And as a matter of fact, I got the finished manuscript right here. And, as soon as I'm going through some business things, like I'm setting up an LLC and whatnot, as soon as I get that all done and I'm going to start getting that one ready to publish as well. So,
okay.
Publishing is so much fun.
There's a lot of drudgery in it, isn't there?
Oh, jeez, isn't there ever?
So we had said we would get together and talk about Christian fantasy and it came up right off the bat because of your book. So, how would you define like this subgenre that you know that is Christian fantasy?
The funny thing is I'm on I'm in a writer's group that deals with Christian fantasy and a lot, or I wouldn't say Christian fantasy, but Christian writing. And there are a few of us in there who, I mean, the people that participate go from people who deal with secular sort of, writing, but are Christian. And then there are those who go into full Christian, like the Amish romance. Before I got associated with this group, I didn't even know that existed. But you know, like the Amish romance or people who deal with more upfront and scriptural Christian stuff. And then I'm kind of like in the middle where I take a lot of like concepts from Christianity and some like biblical lore, and then I either reframe it or I kind of like take bits and pieces of it and put it into my world. And the funny part was is that I started this quest like back in the early 2000s. And I debated it myself. I debated with myself at that time whether I wanted to do, you know, just fantasy that was just very secular, or if I wanted to actually include some of my religious beliefs. I'm a Lutheran.
Okay.
Some of my religious beliefs and the things that I know from the Bible. And it was always sort of this sort of tension that I had where how do you kind of separate you from your writing?
Uh-huh.
And so at that time, I decided to kind of like keep it as secular as possible. Don't get into any religion per se. Don't get into any like greater, you know, moral concepts, and just keep it straight fantasy. So I had this book. I tried shopping it around, and it never got published. So it didn't surprise me because the writing was awful. It was bad. I actually found out. I thought it was like in early 2000s when I tried to query it out, because back then there was no self-publishing.
Yeah.
So you had to go through publishers. You had to go through agents. And one of them said, you know, if you rewrite this, it will, you know, there's kind of a story here, but you kind of need to rewrite it. You need to do this, 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 and this. And I was like, you know, this has been about 2-3 years. I'm not rewriting this. I'm done. So from about 2006 to about 2019, I put all of my writing on hold, didn't do anything. And then around, I think it was like 2017, I always had this, the book that I was shopping around was supposed to be a series. And I had like an ending in mind for the series. I actually wrote a little short story about it. But it was kind of a romance. Uh-huh. And I wanted to finalize that. For some reason, that had always bothered me. So I think it was December 2017. I sat down and I started rewriting this short story. And it ended up being a book that's like 100 and some thousand words. I mean, it's like 170,000 words. It was huge. And it's awful. I mean, it's written like crap. But it has a lot of good concepts in it, things that I can recycle. And it only took me about a month and a half. And I was rather surprised by that. It's like it was pounding my head, you know, it needed to get out. So I got it out of there. And then I decided, well, you know, maybe I should take another stab at my original story. Uh-huh. The one that I tried publishing around like early 2000s. And once again, I revisited that same debate.
Uh-huh.
Do I go with a more scriptural type of story? Do I include elements of my faith or what's in scripture in that type of story?
Yeah.
Or do I keep it secular? And I finally decided, you know, all of my life experiences told me you can't really lie to yourself, or you can't lie to others about what you believe. And you kind of have to put yourself into your writing. So, and I feel very strongly about certain things. So I took my writing. When I rewrote the story, I decided to include scriptural elements.
Yeah.
And, you know, but the whole thing is that I tried to do it with a light touch. The thing is that there's a lot of people really like sort of like the good and evil type stories. They like stories, I don't want to say that validate their beliefs, but at least touch on their beliefs and sort of validate some of their feelings about it. And so I decided, well, if I'm going to do that, You know, I'm going to kind of keep it sort of light, but introduce these elements where they're appropriate and not try to, like, put doctrine in it, but to put, like, core things about them. And, for example, like faith. What is faith? And, you know, what is belief? Why does evil exist in the world?
Yeah.
And take these little bits and pieces and shove them in where it is, where I think it was appropriate. And in the end, it turned out really well, I think. And so I handed the original, the first book that I wrote, I actually broke it up into two. And I gave the first part of that and I rewrote it and handed it to my wife. And she was like, she read it. And so I asked her, so what do you think? And she goes, this is as good of a story as anything I've read. Now, my wife likes to read Dean Koontz and Stephen King and all that other stuff. And I was like, and she's a real reader. I mean, she's not, you know, she's not like she'll read anything. She's a real reader. So yeah. I was like, really? She goes, yeah, you should have no problem getting this published. And I was like, yeah, I don't think so. So then to kind of like make sure that it wasn't, you know, just bias there, we got her best friend to read over the book. And the best friend is a person who is, you know, she's a big fantasy nut. She's a big Harry Potter nut. She read it. We took her out to dinner and she just gushed over the writing. And I was like, well, maybe I got something here.
Yeah, you might have hit on something.
So I might have hit on something.
I like a couple of things that you said that you can't. Did you say you can't lie to yourself? You can't hide.
Yeah, you can't really hide what it is or who you are, or what you believe.
Yeah,
and plus there are some things in there that are very powerful.
Yeah.
And why would you want to deny the reader those things when you could leverage them in your story?
Yeah.
And give it depth and meaning.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, and I see a lot of parallels outside of like what I do in I have epics fantasy. It's not Christian fantasy, but there's good and evil in it. But. I want to put a pin in that and come back to it, but because you deliberated on like how much, at what level to put in there, like whether you're going to put scripture or just vague elements, and it's an interesting choice to have to make, right? And
yeah, well, the thing is, you know, I'm writing a fantasy story.
Uh-huh.
And so if I'm writing a fantasy story and I'm building my own world, am I going to tell the same story that's already been told or am I going to tell something new? And if, you know, if I'm going to adapt scripture, that means I have to bring in Moses. That means I've got to bring in Jesus. I've got to bring in Peter. I got to bring in all these scriptural people. And at that point, it stops becoming its own fantasy world and becomes just becomes mimicry of ours.
Uh-huh.
So there are certain things that I did. Like I took the prophets of old, I took the model of the prophets of old and I included them. I took, elements of the Book of Enoch, which really isn't scripture, but it is referenced by the Bible.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just little pieces of it, you know, to kind of like add some of the pastiche to that. And then like little things that come both out of the Old and the New Testament that I sort of weave into the story. But I don't, you know, they're not direct quotes. So they're kind of reworded or they're summarized in a different way. And they're included as part of the story or as incidental stuff, but never, you know, like I'm never beating you over the head with it.
Yeah.
And the funny part is that I've got atheists that read my stuff and they have no issue with it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think I've done my job in that regard. And it only seemed right because the funny part is when I first came up with the concept of the book, of this original book, and I'll call it the Frankie book because that's the main character on that. Uh-huh. The Frankie book, the original concept I came up with was actually born out of a single line from Revelation, which I'm not going to say because it would kind of like spoil things. Okay. I'm very tight-lipped about
that. Wait and find out.
Yeah, wait and find out. Wait for years to find out. But it came from a single line in Revelation, and it was a line that, you know, it's kind of one. It's a very famous line, and it's something that you probably don't think about. But it got me to thinking. You know,
you're making me really want to know what the line is.
Yeah,
that's all right.
It got me to thinking about, well, what does that exactly mean? And some other elements too that are very integral to like Judaism and Christianity, that, you know, that allows me to take that and kind of play with it, and in some instances, sort of investigate it without actually, you know, like I said, taking things like for example, prophecy, and beating you over the head with it.
Yeah.
Everybody in their fantasy book has a prophecy, and yet I'm no different. And everybody has a chosen one. I'm no different. But what if you take those elements, you play with them? What if you kind of like, you know, sort of investigate them and look deeper into their meaning? And so that's what I decided to do. Like the first book, the two things that I included, the first book was that because I took this one book that I wrote and I busted it up into two.
Mm-hmm.
The first book becomes kind of like the intro, but it also talks about, you know, it sort of investigates evil a little bit and trying to deal with the absurd. But as I wrote the second book, I found that I was actually concentrating on the concept of faith. And that was, it's funny, the stuff that leaks out while you write, because I came up with a couple of things, and there's a line in there where one character says to the main character, "You have to have faith." And the main character goes, faith is just a word.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, as sort of disbelieving as that sounds, it allows me to explore. It allows me to have that character from that perspective to actually explore it.
Uh-huh.
And throw that into the mix. You know, what is faith? And what does faith do? So it's little things that you can play with, and you can weave into the story, and you can build on.
Yeah,
it's stuff like that.
Yeah, and so I hear, you know, from before we started this call, I was thinking like, what goes under the umbrella of Christian fantasy, and I guess like technically there's Good Omens, which I haven't read, but you know, there's the Amazon series. And then there's, what's it called? A Wrinkle in Time.
Yeah.
You know, which is largely not apparently Christian, but it has Christian elements in there, indelibly, exactly. included. Exactly. And then there's, what else? There's the Left Behind series. Yep. And I myself am in a writing group where somebody is writing, I guess it's Christian fantasy, because there are angels and demons. But you know, back to your comment about you had to decide kind of what level of spirituality or scriptural references to put in there.
Well, here's the thing. A lot of my writing deals directly with the notion of a monotheistic God,
mm-hmm.
and stuff like prayer and things like that. But I don't put it front and center. I put it kind of off to the side as kind of like elements of a character. Like in my second book, The Wizard's Stone, The main character is a very sort of a very bookish and devout young man, very forthright, very faithful. Or mm-hmm. I wouldn't say faithful, but he's very dutiful. And he was raised to believe in this one god called the Allfather. And so he keeps sort of, you know, he does prayer in the evening. He has very strong moral beliefs, and the conflict of the story, part of the conflict of the story, is him having to do things that he knows he shouldn't.
Uh-huh.
But he's sort of pushed into a corner by a mercenary who is there to protect him, and the mercenary is completely amoral. And he's all about making sure he lives long enough to spend his gold, and he's paid a lot of gold.
Uh-huh.
And the other mercenaries around him, they're not much better. Matter of fact, they're probably worse than he is. So there's that tension between the two. And, you know, where everybody starts at the beginning of the book and where they end up at the end of the book, that's another thing. There's a growth arc in there and whatnot. So it's little things like that where you can take these different portions of the things that you believe and stick them into characters and then show how they react to different situations. And I think that that's very important because it gives you it doesn't show that somebody is sitting there spouting a bunch of Bible verses, that they are showing their belief and their faith and living it and also dealing with having to preserve what they believe in a world that is ambivalent to that is pretty ambivalent to their faith and their morality.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, things that get exposed that decent people do that sound at first blush pretty disgusting. Yeah. You know, so and I throw a couple pieces in there where I also open up the door for other books later on down the road. So
yeah. So I think it sounds like, yeah. Sorry, I'm still distracted by thoughts of kind of brainstorming in my own mind what is mm-hmm. what falls under Christian fantasy, because there's two movies called Noah that I'm aware of and that I would put as Christian fantasy, and they're. Yeah. Based on the biblical prophet Noah. But there was one that I saw part of on TV in the 90s, and it started like on screen. There was this kind of notice that they took artistic license, and we couldn't watch it. We're like, when we first saw, oh, there's this movie coming on called Noah. Okay, great. And yeah, no, like Noah was trying to convince Lot to leave Sodom and Gomorrah. And
like, long time frame.
Yeah. They took a lot of artistic license. And then the other one that I saw recently was it has a star-studded cast with I forget his name. The gladiator
Russell Crowe,
and Emma Watson and Anthony Hopkins. Was there somebody else? Anyway,
I thought that was the second Noah.
Yeah,
because I remember Russell Crowe played in one called Noah. I think it was.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, and they had something like these rock creatures that.
Yeah, that's
helped
the one.
Him.
Yeah, they were the fallen angels. This is the one that I saw recently. They were the fallen angels, and they had become these rock creatures, and it was really interesting. And it was, I did appreciate some things about it, how they folded in some things about like when he's drunk and his kids find him naked, passed out, and walk backwards to cover him with a blanket.
Yeah.
It was very interesting how they inserted those details that are actually from the Bible. But then they had these rock creature fallen angels, and it was really interesting, to say the least. It was
I don't know if I would have taken the rock creatures very well.
Yeah.
So I mean
he wanted to he got murderous, like yeah. Spoiler alert, but he thought that God's plan was to eliminate mankind from the earth, and Emma Watson was allowed on the ark because they thought that she was sterile, and then turns out she's not, and he's like, oh no, we're making more people, we can't do that. And so he's like, if that baby is a girl, I have to kill her. I stopped watching. I had to come back and finish it another day, but
I mean, yeah. I've seen some stuff like there was, I think this is a lot of the problems with Hollywood doing religious stuff. I shouldn't say Christianity, but doing religious stuff. Uh-huh. And also probably on the other end, you have the Christian entertainment complex.
Yeah.
Most people pretty much have decided that Christian entertainment is crap. And I have to agree with them, but a lot of it is. Uh-huh. You're part of the writer dojo, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You met that Larry Correa's comment about, you know, and he's actually took that from somebody else. I forget who it was. I mean, it was Butler, but he said, don't preach more than you entertain.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of where I'm going. It's good to take elements of stuff and throw it in, but in the end, this thing, it's entertainment.
Okay? Yeah.
It's not something you're gonna live your life by.
Yeah.
Lord of the Rings is
same thing with mine. Like there is some morality in it because there is good and evil. There's a struggle between good and evil in Nightshade Unicorn. And there are truths that the character learns, you know, and explores. And like those are real things that you could go and study and study from scripture. But I'm not there to preach about those concepts. I'm there to share an interesting story that should entertain.
It's always good to leave them something to think about.
Yeah.
But when you start going past the entertainment, part of it, you're going to lose people. Now there are some people who need that, and so they'll go towards the very, you know, strictly Christian stuff. And I'm not saying that stuff has no purpose. There's some people who love it. Mm-hmm. But the vast majority of people don't. And the stuff I write would never get published by a major Christian publisher. It just wouldn't. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not hitting the beats that they're going to want me to hit. And I have a real problem with that. Consequently, if I go too far the other way, I can pretty much tell you secular publishing won't touch my stuff either.
Uh-huh.
So in some ways I've painted myself in a box by calling myself Christian fiction, but at the same time, once again, I'm not lying to myself. You know, the stuff I believe is the stuff I believe, and it allows me to put the stuff in there that I really want to say. So thank God for self-publishing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, where you can do this stuff.
Yeah.
But you know, like I said, one of my favorite musicians, a guy named Kerry Livgren. I don't know if you've ever heard of the of the group Kansas.
Oh, I've Carry heard
on, Carry on, My Wayward Son, Dust in the Wind.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Point of No Return. Yeah, multi-platinum band. Kerry Livgren was one of those guys who was always searching for something. You know, he'd get involved in Eastern philosophies and whatnot, but he was always searching for something. And I think it was not long after, I think it was either Monolith, their album Monolith, or The Point of No Return, he had a conversion. And he converted to Christianity and became a very, and to this very day, he's a very devout Christian. You know, the one problem was is that he wanted to do more about his Christian faith than I think the rest of the band wanted to. If you listen, they had an album called Audio Visions. There's a couple of songs in there. One of them is Hold On, which actually was a hit for him.
Uh-huh.
And it was about his wife's conversion to Christianity. And the thing was is that inside Kansas, I loved his music. Even the, you know, the Christianized stuff was excellent. And when he came back for one album, there's a bunch of his stuff that he put in there, and it is very Christian influence and Christian themed. And I love that music, but he went off on his own. I couldn't stand his music. It's like he lost something.
Hmm.
Number one, he lost the filter of the band. He lost the voices I thought uh-huh. told him this'll work. This won't. This is good. This isn't. And, the various talents that his music got filtered through.
Yeah.
But I think he also lost his vision of the songwriting, because his songwriting became, in my opinion, became very flat.
Hmm.
But his stuff in Kansas was fantastic. Even after his conversion, his stuff in Kansas was fantastic. So the thing is that when it started becoming more about the message and less about the music, of course, the music suffered.
Hmm.
And it's very noble that you want to preach the message, and I'm all for that. But you got to preach a message in a way that people find palatable.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Go ahead.
I myself have had notions of wanting to compose some musical piece to express spiritual sentiments. Mm-hmm. And I think, I don't know what he's trying to do with his music. I think what you need to do with entertainment, whether it's writing or with music, is to explore the emotion. You're looking to emote.
Yeah.
And I didn't get this when I was in middle school, high school, in band. You know, I thought I was there to play these notes, to play the flats and sharps and get the correct notes so that it sounded good. I didn't understand that the whole point was to emote. Like, that's why we do it. It makes us feel, and we want to feel.
Exactly.
Whether it's this way or that way, we're trying to convey a feeling. With our stories, we're trying to convey ideas, mm-hmm. yes, but it's not technical ideas, it's emotional ideas. And I think with music, it needs to be that way as well. So you're not trying to preach technical doctrine in a song. You can have doctrine in a song, and it can be enhanced and more uplifting because of it.
Mm-hmm.
But
exactly.
The song exists to emote.
Exactly. And so, once again, if you try and preach more than you entertain, you basically will lose the people. Because there's going to be some people who listen to it, and at the minute the preaching starts, because they didn't listen before, they'll not listen now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the thing is that if you're trying to reach somebody, I go back to Jesus. Jesus is a prime example of probably the best storyteller ever. Some of his stories are probably the most famous stories ever said. You won't get right, you know, the what is it, the Good Samaritan. We have laws based on Good Samaritan laws.
Yeah.
The prodigal son, two most, everybody knows those stories. Those two stories. And if you'll notice, there's absolutely no religiosity. There's no scripture invoked there. It is simply an explanation. It's simply a story told that has a theme and has a moral component.
Yeah.
And then the apostles often come back and say, well, what's this story mean? And then he tells them, you know, because it's not done in a way that's overt. So there's a prime example right there, and it's right out of the Bible.
Hmm. Yeah.
My dog decided to visit me.
Hey, dog. Hello. Wherever you are. Can't see you.
Yeah, he's down over here.
Yeah. Well, we have a cat, but he's not allowed on this floor. Just for, I don't know, I guess, well, we keep the basement door closed so that we don't have an eternally chilly basement, you know? And he has the rest of the house, so...
So you're going to have to give me a minute here. I have to.
Yeah.
He wants something. So give me 1 minute here.
Not a problem.
I'm sorry about that.
That's fine.
So, dog wanted something. I told my wife, go take care of it. So, where were we?
Emote. Jesus's parables.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, right there it shows you. And like I said, in the Bible, in every parable he tells... the apostles always have to ask him, what does that mean? And so he, like I said, he doesn't say anything explicitly, and then he has to kind of explain it later. Mm-hmm. I don't feel the need to explain it later because nobody's there to, I'm not trying to bring anybody's salvation.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to entertain, but at the same time.
Well, and I would say that if somebody wants to know if you're trying to teach any principle, then... Mm-hmm. They can ask you.
Exactly.
Whereas if you put it there at the end of the book, this means that you should, you know, that would probably come off as cheesy.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, I'm not doing this to convert anyone. I'm doing this to entertain. So, you know, put things in their own perspective. And I'm sure if I've said something, God will move somebody's heart to probably go and explore more or think about the things that I wrote in the book.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not converting anybody. I can't even convince my wife to do certain things. So I don't think I'm a real good convincer of anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I was in another podcast and they asked me to tell them about my book.